Well, last week we finished the book of Colossians, and we promised to start a new book this week. So, need a drum roll here. What we've decided to do is actually start a new book that is actually the beginning of a whole testament, which is the beginning of the Old Testament, and that is the book of Genesis. Thought that we would get into the book of Genesis. I wanted to get into the book of Jude. It just seemed like a reasonable choice for some strange reason. I don't know why. And as I was studying the book of Jude, I just for some reason felt that we needed to get into Genesis. So I just have to assume that the Lord is making the choice here. And it's hard to go wrong, actually. So we'll just get started. The book of Genesis, of course, a powerful book, and all of you have varying degrees of understanding of some of these stories. There's a lot of different stories. Many of us grew up with stories of that are included in the book of Genesis. In fact, there's a tremendous amount. A lot of the stories are a little bit bizarre, and that's just important for us to understand. It's a little uncertain who actually wrote it. The book of Genesis is attributed to Moses. In fact, the first five books of the Old Testament are attributed to Moses. And however, there are many out there who say, well, gee, could Moses have really written the book of Genesis? I mean, what about all the things that were before him? And the style looks a lot different. In fact, in the book of Genesis, there's lots of different styles that seem to be there. And so some of the common thought is that Moses was the editor, that he pulled together documents that had been previously written. Some believe that Adam and Eve were created with the ability to write already. That's an interesting thought, isn't it? Did they know how to write? What language did they use? Maybe they spoke English. I doubt it. There's a lot of mystery around the book of Genesis. There are many out there today who believe that, of course, the book of Genesis is a book that contains nothing but myths. Some believe that. I think that what I'd like to do, in fact, is as we start moving through this book, and I don't know what all we're going to cover. We're going to start in the creation story, because that's the beginning, and we'll see where we go from there. But I hope that any of you that have concerns about the fancy word is veracity, the genuineness of this book, that we can dispel any concerns you have, because the depth that is right here in this book is remarkable. And in fact, especially considering when it was written, again, we don't know exactly when it was, or precisely by whom, but we know it was a long time ago. A long time ago. And the other books that were written in these ancient ages are so full of hokey stories, stories that real quickly lost credibility because they were so bizarre at the time. We don't find that in this book. We find almost mind-boggling explanations of how things happened, but written in a way that, remarkably enough, still makes sense today. And that's what we're going to talk about. So, let's just dive in. In chapter 1, very familiar story. I'll tell you, if you want to talk about controversy, here's controversy, right? The creation of the earth and the creation of mankind and the creation of the animals and the creation of the plants. And all this stuff, and of course, that's the big controversy in our society. So we can, I think, again, counter an awful lot of those arguments that are kind of getting batted around today. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was formless and void, and darkness was over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God was moving over the surface of the waters. And God said, "Let there be light." And there was light. And God saw that the light was good. And God separated the light from the darkness. And He called the light day, and the darkness He called night. And there was evening and there was morning, one day. We got to stop there. Did you know that there are actually two creation accounts in the book of Genesis? How many of you knew that? A few of you. Only a few. What we're reading is the beginning of the first account. And in chapter 2, we're going to run into another account. Now, some people have felt, and by the way, they, on the surface, don't agree. I'll tell you that right up front. Some people are troubled by that. Well, understandably so. Now, I want to propose that they do indeed agree, and that we can, by understanding, let me back up a little bit. I was quite troubled by the creation story here many years ago. Quite troubled. Wondering, wait a minute, what really happened here? And actually, over the years, I've kind of contemplated this whole thing, wondered about it, and of course the obvious questions are, how does it fit with our understanding of the universe that we have today? And we certainly do know a lot more about some of the facts of astronomy and the facts of physics than we did then. I'm not going to say we knew more, because I think if you know God, you know the most. And anything else, if you don't know God but know a lot of facts about science, you don't really know a whole lot. If you know God but don't know a whole lot of facts about science, you know an awful lot. So I'm not going to say today that we know more than people did then. People who knew God then knew an awful lot. And in fact, actually, there is some evidence that there's a tremendous amount of knowledge that has been lost. The knowledge that enabled some of these ancient societies to build these remarkable things that were built. I was looking at a recreation of the city of Ephesus on a picture. City of Ephesus alone. Some people don't talk much about Ephesus. City of Ephesus. And the city itself with these enormous columns and enormous gateways and paved with materials that we can only imagine. I mean, it's just some pretty amazing stuff. City of Corinth was the same way. The city of Caesarea, which was a newer city compared to some cities, was apparently at one time even paved almost the entire city with marble. And this is remarkable. They had allegedly even cemented in the bay. The harbor, poured cement down the harbor, the cement to control erosion. You know, I mean, it's an amazing thing. Well, there's a lot of amazing things that can go on. I'm not an archaeologist, so I'm not an expert in that area. But the fact is that, there are some facts that we know. We know today that the Earth is not the center of our solar system. Well, all of us know that. You learn that in elementary school, right? So, that's an important point. We know today that our solar system is not the only solar system. Lots of stars out there. There's evidence that some of these stars have planets. In fact, there's no reason to believe they wouldn't, really. Some believe that there may be other habitable planets out there in other solar systems. Well, there's no evidence of that. But, you know, interesting thought. We know that that there is not a shell over the Earth. People back in this age believed, and even, you know, trying to understand the Genesis story, believed that there was a shell, literally a shell, over the sky, a canopy, or what was called the firmament in the old, and this was a belief even not that many hundreds of years ago. But a big shell over the universe, and that in that were, you know, kind of right in that shell were the stars, kind of like, you know, I don't know if they thought they were holes or they're painted on, you know, I'm not quite sure. Flashlights, but they really thought it was a shell. And we'll get into that a little bit here as we go. Well, we know we don't have that today. We understand that, that we've got, you know, a certain, that the Earth is spherical. We understand that. We know that there's some sort of an atmosphere. We understand that there's a moon, and we know a lot more about the moon today than we used to. And, you know, there's a lot of things. Well, I'm not telling you anything you don't know. The issue is, how are we going to square that with what we're reading? Now, I'm going to propose a way of understanding this Genesis story. This is just a way. I'm not going to claim this is the way, because I wasn't there. And so I don't really know exactly how God did this. And when I get to heaven and go up to God, and God tells me, however he chooses to do these things, I'm not sure how he educates. I don't know if he's got a lot of videos or what. When I find out what it was all about, I have no doubt that I'll say, whoa, you sure fooled me. I didn't, for the life of me, understand it. And in fact, I wouldn't be surprised if there's some of the things that we're going to talk about here in the next couple days. We'll say, you know, you went to awfully strong, great lengths to try to figure that out. It really didn't happen that way at all. And in fact, you know what, when it was written down, well, you know, I let that one go by. I wasn't worried about that thing. Yeah, they were a little off the wall, but, you know, well, okay, I'm not interested in going there. I'm not going to take that step to say that there's anything that was not fully and accurately transmitted in the Word of God. I hold my stake in the ground that says the Word of God was inspired by God. And that what we need is right here. So I'm not going to get into the liberal camp, the ultra-liberal camp that tries to say, well, you know, this is just completely, well, that really didn't happen. That was corrupted with the oral tradition handed down to one person. I'm not going to state that, because I don't think we need to. The Scripture is intact on its own. Okay. So what do we mean by this? Well, here's day one. God created the heavens and the earth. Well, let's assume that what he means by that is he created the whole, all the stuff, all the basic principles. We've got to be a little careful, because he's going to get light comes after he creates all the stuff. Now, think for a minute. When I one thing I think we'll see here, and I believe is one of the key explanations for reconciling chapter 1 and chapter 2, is that God didn't just create things, right? I mean, he didn't create the wood here. He didn't just create this wood that was used to make this pulpit. He created the whole process, the entire biological process, for the trees to replicate themselves through a very, very sophisticated system that gets into cellular biology and DNA sequences and all these kind of things. We're talking a very, very sophisticated process. It takes a lot more creativity to come up with the process than the pieces. a lot more. And one of the things I believe that this chapter 1 is talking about is a lot of it being the processes, the laws of physics that had to get invented. Scientists just discover laws. Scientists don't invent laws. God is the one who invented them all. What does this mean? This is kind of a very general statement. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. I mean, think about it. We're talking big stuff. I mean, earth, in this case, is not just the earth ball. It's not just this marble that's zipping through space, right? But in this case, he's probably talking about earth, meaning that whole concept of matter, the whole idea of matter. How many of you know what the periodic table is? Okay, about half of you know what the periodic table is. Periodic table is a chart that's on the wall of most chemistry rooms, and what it does is explain the subtle differences between the elements, all the different elements. There's only about 100, give or take some, elements that are used as the building blocks to make everything. Everything. Only about 100. And it's okay, did you say, there's a whole bunch more after that. Well, there's a few more that man has seen momentarily in accelerators, nuclear accelerators little elements that have appeared just for a moment when we've collided two things at near the speed of light. But that's a whole other issue. For the most part, about 100 elements, God does it all. You need a whole lot. I mean, this is really interesting. And you get into biological science, and what are there, 21 amino acids? Isn't that right? Lisa, you know. Yeah, 21. 21 amino acids. And all of living things, basically, or all of mankind is basically all products of those amino acids. There's only four different elements that make up DNA. There's four. And just different combinations of these, different sequences of these four elements generate our entire genetic pattern. From four building blocks. It's remarkable what God can do. So what is he doing here? In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. This whole concept. I suspect what he's saying here is all the natural laws, the whole foundation, the principles of how everything was going to work, just did it. Okay, let me create that. For the entire universe. Now, when it happens, it's formless. Okay, well, that makes sense. There's no particular order to it, apparently. Formless and void is this is the New American Standard that I'm reading from. The Hebrew words are funny, kind of a rhyming words. Tohu vavohu are the two Hebrew words for it. In fact, the second of those words is only used three times in the Bible. And each time it's with that first word. The first word, tohu. And it always means just kind of devastated. The other two times are once in Isaiah and once in Jeremiah, where he's talking about how devastated at least the area over in Judea, probably talking about Edom, where the Edomites live, and in the other case, he may have been talking about Israel. But devastation. I mean, it looked like just nothing. It looked like some of the science fiction movies have shown things look like. I always enjoyed the old film Planet of the Apes. Where I show a picture and show this just devastated, awful place. And then there's one point where you see the head of the Statue of Liberty, right, kind of poking up out of the rubble of sand, and you realize what it is. Anyway, this word refers to that, just devastation. Well, what does that mean? Well, think about it. I mean, when God started whatever it was, now today scientists have what they call the Big Bang Theory, and it's probably not a bad theory. God started all this stuff, And did he start it with a giant bang? I mean, you know, nobody was there to hear it. Was there really a bang? Okay, that's a philosophical discussion. But there was something happened. And all of this universe was founded. The universe. That's just, I forget the earth for a moment. We're talking the whole expanse of universe that we can't even imagine. God does it. And of course it's different. There's no order, particular order to it yet. What God's doing now, he's going to bring some order. Well, what does he do? He said, and I don't know what this means, that the Spirit of God was moving over the surface of the waters. First of all, I believe, and again, this is just a theory, the word waters probably refers to that, this kind of amorphic gaseous state. Just, you know, I mean, what's water? Water is all turbulent. It's kind of, yeah, you can't get hold of it, right? Just there. The difference between a water and a gas, there's actually not a whole lot depending on how you're looking at things. They wouldn't have had a word for plasma, which is kind of something that we talk about today in physics, at least. I'm not talking about blood plasma, but another, some people call it the fourth state of matter. But they wouldn't have words for some of the states here, but okay, waters. God is moving in the midst of His creation. He's moving in the midst of it. He has permeated His creation. He is there. It wasn't just something that He just kind of threw out and went back sipping his coffee, reading in the morning paper. You know? He did it. And He was integrated. He was moving in the whole sphere. God's got to be big. Got to be big. He says, let there be light. Let there be light. All of us have heard that. And since this would probably be the whole creation of electromagnetic energy, that's all light is. Light is just a tiny little subset of the vast expanse of, again, electromagnetic energy of all different frequencies. And it's that whole, the presence of electromagnetic energy is what activates the whole process of matter even. Einstein was famous for a little tiny equation. Actually famous for a lot of things, but he came up with one little equation. Does anybody know what that equation was? What's that? Yes, sir, Ryan. That's right. E equals mc squared. Now, what did E stand for? Energy. That's right. And M?
Mass.
C? Let's see. Somebody knows here. I'll let you know, Jim Lesher.
Speed of light.
Speed of light. C stood for the speed of light. 186,000 miles a second. That's fast. Right? Remember, the moon's only 240,000 miles away. And just a, you know. Shoot, that's easy in today's speeds, right? So 186,000 miles a second is pretty fast. Excuse me, 186,000 light years a second. Miles? Oh, that's right, because we take that and make a light year. Okay, just got a little confused there. 186,000 light years. Easy to get confused with these numbers, I'll tell you. Now that's fast. Now energy is moving that fast. And energy, when Einstein said E equals mc squared, he said if you take a piece of matter and you move it that fast, it's all energy. He said it's pure energy. All of a sudden, what he did for science is say, wait a minute, there's no real difference between matter and energy. It's all the speeds at which things are moving. Now, it turns out that light that we are able to see by, and light, another form of light, is X-rays. We're able to see other ways with those. Another form of light is radio waves, communication. If anybody has a cellular phone, it's all because of light. Well, okay, light in expanded sense, electromagnetic radiation. God created that process. He created that whole thing, and the interaction between light, or energy and matter was totally, totally integrated in a way that only God could possibly design. Only God could do this. We're talking big stuff. Okay, now, what does he do? He saw the light. He saw that it was good. Notice the comparison here. The earth, or all this creation, as majestic as it might have been, as awesome and awe-inspiring as it might have been, he saw it was just kind of formless and void. It didn't have anything of the substance that God was intending. Didn't have it yet. But light started it. Light. Light brought activation to the whole process. That's actually one possible argument, by the way, against the Big Bang theory is this what may be a sequence here of God creating the energy afterward, because the other was just kind of bland. What was it? A soup? Kind of a I don't know. Was it just the atoms that God created, and they were just out there in a super low energy state and basically collapsed and dead? And when light came, that they all became energized, and it all didn't, I'm not going to say came alive, but it all then started to generate this energy, I can't remember what it was. It was, you may remember, it wasn't some more sunspots, it was another major explosion on the surface of the sun that actually caused some electromagnetic disturbances here last week. It was just a big event. You see the gaseous boiling and flames on the sun, and you don't really want to go there. Anyway, the fact is, when John calls Jesus the light of the world, the light of the world that the darkness couldn't overcome, it's the same thing. It's the same image. It's the same thing he's talking about here. Just as light was that energizing factor for all of God's material universe. We haven't gotten to life yet. But just as light there got it all going, Jesus is the light of this world. For us in the spirit domain, the presence of Jesus Christ is just as critical for having a viable spirit as energy is for having viable matter. Now that's important to understand. The image, and it's, you know what, we're just barely grasping this stuff with our knowledge of science. I believe that as we learn more about science, we learn more about how deep, how magnificent this story of creation is. It's not the other way around. Not by any stretch. Now, we haven't gotten the evolution arguments yet here, because evolution doesn't address this part of things. Evolution starts with something already here. And so the obvious question is, how did that happen? The evolutionists can't tell you. Those who claim that somehow evolution gets rid of the idea of God are clearly just wallowing in immense ignorance. Because you got to start. You've got to go back and say, well, how did the rest of it start? God tells us. The light was good. Now look, and now this next phrase, he says, and God separated the light from the darkness. There's some technical terms I've got to introduce here. One of the terms is called absorption. Another is called reflection. And another is called refraction. But I think what we'll do is stick with scattering. It turns out that light interacts with matter in a lot of different ways. But one thing it does, you see this book here, right? You can see this. You see these walls. Right? These are walls. Now, the reason you see these is because light is hitting these walls and several things are happening. One of the things that's happening is light is getting reflected off. And so you actually see some light here. It may not look like light, but this is light. If the lights were off and we had shades and everything else, then you wouldn't see anything, right? You gotta have light in order to see. The eye has to have light. Well, this particular wall is beige. I guess, is that the color? What's that? Josh, what's the color? No, don't tell me. You knew I was going to do that. I don't know. What color is this? I don't know what this color is. It's probably some newfangled name for it. What is it? Blush. We have the absolute. So we have this blush color. And now why do we have this blush color? Because the other colors, light consists of all colors. And the other colors that are contained in the light are being absorbed into this material. And what's getting reflected off is the combination of those colors that makes blush. Doesn't make you blush, but it makes blush, right? Now, what else is happening? Well, you kind of look at it and you can tell that there's some sort of texture. It's not like this real shiny surface. It's kind of a matte surface or a flat surface. Well, why is that? That's because the light is also being scattered off the surface. It's getting scattered in a certain way, and so it gets kind of mixed up. The light gets mixed up, and it makes it look like by the time the light reaches your eye, there's no reflections per se. I mean, you can't see your image. I mean, if you look close enough, you can actually see a little bit of a reflection here of yourself. You have to really look close. It's what's called a specular finish, all of that is because light is interacting with this stuff. You wouldn't see it if light wasn't interacting. Some light's getting absorbed, and some light's getting reflected directly back. Some light's being scattered. And those qualities enable you to see. You get to see what that object is. God is separating, in a sense, the very means of which, by which you get shadows, for example. Take a shadow. If I took this Bible and held it outside, you'd see a shadow on the ground. Well, why is that? That's because light is getting absorbed by the Bible, and you don't see it down behind, so you get this dark patch. In a sense, that light being separated from the darkness. And I'm just going to propose that what God meant here by this particular phrase is that whole process of light interacting with matter, the concepts, those optical concepts that actually Newton researched, oddly, and most people don't know that. Isaac Newton wasn't famous just for gravity, also for his experiments on light. Things that he stumbled on, those are some of the things God created. Light interacting with matter. God separates the light from the darkness. When the light is present, you look out on the planets out there and half of them are piece of them is all light and the other part is really dark, and that's light being separated from darkness. That is real. It is apparently the way God did it. And it is also symbolic today because we see the same thing. Jesus talked about that. The darkness couldn't overcome the light. He was the light of the world. Darkness could not overcome Him. There's no way. And he talked all the way through the New Testament, the whole concept of separation is everywhere evident. Separation. Walking in the light as He is in the light. Jesus talked about that. The children of this world walk in darkness. We hear that. And they don't know where they're going. With Christ, we are in the light. And that is magnificent. So we have that whole thing, that separation between light and darkness. We talk about black and white, seeing things black and white, an old expression that we use. Of course, today we try to to be a little more politically correct in our language, so we try not to talk about black and white in our language. And we're losing an awful lot of just good old-fashioned communication. Some of it is probably respectful, and some of it is just dumb. But we talk about that. Yeah, you know, there is right and wrong. There really is. And we know that. There is right and wrong. There's hardly a story out there, whether it's on video, whether it's in the movies, or whether it's in a book. There's hardly a story out there that isn't somehow describing the conflict between right and wrong, between good and evil. We recognize that. No matter how much relativism we've tried to smuggle into our society in the last 20 or 30 years, we can't get away from the fact that there is good and evil. It is there by observation. You can't avoid it. We see the things, and the only way that we cope, we human beings, and I don't care whether a person is a Christian or a non-Christian, the only way that we cope with the wretched evil that is often in our newspapers, or at least described in our newspapers or on our news reports, is by recognizing, yeah, okay, there's some evil people out there. And we're quick to do that. Now, you get real intellectual about it, and you start trying to study it and say, oh, well, you know, well, let's understand where this person went wrong. Obviously, it was their parents' fault. Yeah. Clearly, it's because of this or this or this, and let's try to understand it and get it all there. And there's no good, no bad people. There's no real evil, of course. It's just misdirection, and we're going to rehabilitate these evil ones, and we're going to help, you know, because they're not really evil. It's just a different way of looking at things. And of course, that's where we now start to go, well, it's just different. It's not bad. There's no good and bad. There's just different. Diverse. Everybody's a little different. So it's okay if you choose to use what God has created with those of your same sex. Oh, it's just different. That's okay. You want to do this, you want to do that. Oh, well, it's okay. Whatever's right for you. You know what? We've been trying that kind of attitude in our culture for the last 25 or 30 years, and yet you still have books about good and evil. You still have books about right and wrong. Stories. It's still there. Now maybe we've pushed the line a little bit. Well, this used to be evil, and now it's really not. You know? Well, I don't believe that, first of all, but the fact is that that we still recognize that there is wrong out there. And when we talk about wrong, it is part of darkness. The whole concept of right and wrong, of separation between light and darkness, was there from the very beginning, and we're going to see more. Now you say, well, wait a minute, God created a perfect world. Well, we'll go on and see. Let's see what he says. He doesn't have to necessarily say that, by the way. God created the world. We can't use terms of whether it was perfect or not, but he did see. You notice he didn't say anything about the formlessness and void and darkness, but he did say something about the light. And what did he say? He saw the light, and that it was good. There was good. But there's also some conflict. Okay, we have a lot more to cover over the next few weeks, so we'll just stop there. It's just barely scratching the surface.